ta 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 rum pa ta bum bam bam ra ta 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 rum pa ta bum bam.
Going to Forest Hills High School was like going to a different planet. For the first time in my life, I was surrounded by people from India and Africa and South America.
Awakaduro, waduro sonoko. Hey, awakaduro, waduro lonoko.
I'm sitting on a wooden crate.
As immigration policy is hotly debated around the country in terms of national and cultural security, crossing the boulevard, strangers, neighbors, aliens, and new America presents the human stories of why immigrants and refugees have migrated to the U.S., what their experience have been since they came here pre- and post 9/11. Based on Warren Lehrer and Judith Sloan's critically acclaimed book, actor and writer Judith Sloan channels many of the people that the couple interviewed on their three-year journey around the world through the borough of Queens, New York. Crossing the Boulevard will open the Co-Festival of Performance in Amherst on Friday. That's this Friday, July 10th. And Judith Sloan joins us now to tell us more. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Okay, so which comes first? Obviously, the actual going around and talking to people comes first.
Well, actually, the recognition of where we were came first. I was already producing public radio documentaries and doing things in Mississippi and doing things in other places in the U.S. And my husband and I were looking at where we lived. And, you know, we live in a place where there is no color to on the demographic maps where it's majority something
right.
else. My neighborhood, there is no majority. Whoever you are, you're a minority. So the first thing was we were like, wait, where are we? We're in the most diverse place in the world. We should document this. And so the first part was really planning, engaging with people. You know, we live in Queens, so I think part of it was documenting our backyard, because how do you gain the trust of people who are, you know, many people came surviving torture or other kinds of wars. I had worked for Human Rights First. I don't know if you know that organization, but they focus mostly on asylum issues.
Yeah.
So I was working with them. And because I was working with them, we ended up interviewing some of their clients. So we had these inroads in the community already, which I think was key to being able to spend, you know, this kind of unbelievable amount of time, over 3 years, gathering everything.
When you talk about the gathering, is it always the idea that it's going to be multidimensional in the sense that you are going to have a project out of it, you're going to have a book, you're going to have a performance?
Actually, yes. We came up with that in 1998 or 99. The idea that it would be multimedia. And when we went to W.W. Norton with the book and a musical soundscape, because some of the rest of those audio, if we want to listen to any of that, are like clips of the real people and kind of mixes, hybrid mixes of music and voices, they looked at us like we were crazy. But now that doesn't seem so odd, does it?
No.
That you would have a soundscape for a book. But nobody ever questions that you would have a soundscape for a movie.
True.
So then the hardcover came out with a CD in it. And we always knew it was going to be a performance and a series of workshops. And it's part of how we got a lot of grants to look at the multidimensional aspect of it. So it could live in many places.
Now, when you're doing the performance, you could, there could be just the voices, but you interpret some of those voices.
I think it would be just a multimedia show if it was just the voices. But yes, I started out as an actress and then became a radio producer. And after editing, for anybody who edits, you know, you spend hundreds of hours listening to the voices, you end up embodying those. So I always knew I was going to perform some of it. And I think now, you know, when you have a project that's had such a long life and it's been in some universities and used as a common reader in several universities, it just, the stories end up having different meaning over time. So, for example, when we went into a Nigerian church and the prophetess was preaching and she said, I pray for a shield over all the children of this church, that they will be safe on the street. They will not be pushed in the subway track. You will shield them from bullets and police that misunderstand who they really are. So, you know, I think if we were in a Polish white church, she wouldn't be praying that the teenagers wouldn't get shot. And so now it has a different meaning, right? Than it,
yes.
But it's clearly been something that's been going on for a long time. I was listening earlier to your show and listening about the cigarettes. So
we were talking about the CVS decision to back out of the Chamber of Commerce.
And the fact that cigarettes get dumped in other countries,
yes,
more than, you know, as people get health conscious,
yes,
here. There was a man from Egypt that we interviewed who said that my degree was in agriculture with a specialty in chemical pesticides. At the time, it was coming out that DDT would give you cancer. Not just you, but your second, third generation. So I started talking like this to my bosses. They put me in a backroom job. It's not good for everyone like me with contrary opinions to go to Europe or America. I should stay in my country, go to jail, and be killed. And so, you know, he had this incredible insight about what was going on globally. And then, of course, he ends up in Queens. And so, you know, when you were talking at the top about immigration is always seen as a threat, right, to,
yeah,
national security or our culture, whatever that means, something missing from the dialogue is that, so after 3 years of spending all this time with people, there's a profundity in learning about people who are from such diverse cultures that's missing from our national dialogue. What can we learn from each other about looking at life, looking at what we're living in terms of sustainability?
And not to get off the subject, but don't you think most people who live in the world and live in communities and live in cities like Albany, where we are right now,
yep,
know that? At the core.
At the core, they know that, and somehow you get derailed by the
politics.
Yeah, I mean, if Donald Trump can keep talking, you know, it's just we get derailed by politics, and also I think by issues being used as a political football. So if I can say you, Joe, are the problem, then I can use that too.
But it would seem to me that the reason a piece like yours would be resonant to an audience is because people can identify with it, because they know these voices, they've heard these voices, they're aware that these people are here and have very similar situations.
And I think that that's a good point, but I also think people, it resonates because there are so many people, look, all over upstate New York or Massachusetts or any city, whose grandparents, great-grandparents, whose families came from somewhere else.
Sure.
And so they're also resonating with that dual identity. I know many people who grew up in households where the Italian mothers never really left their community, or the Greek mothers never left their community, or the Jewish mothers never left their community. And so those kinds of issues are still happening with kids who just happen to be from China and Venezuela and Senegal and other places. So I think there is a way that, you know, those stories resonate for everybody across generations and cultures. And part of this piece is I'm trying to make those connections too, because I was born in the United States, but my grandparents fled a different war.
Right.
So
when you do the piece, how narrated is it? Are you the narrator? Or are you the constant?
I'm also narrating with short little clips. Like if I say Ramon Mapala is from the Philippines, where he's one of many ex-detainees. When the dictator Ferdinand Marcos declared martial war, he was detained along with 10,000 other ex-detainees, and he is a political activist by night, but a real estate agent by day, where he helped his friend Ninochka Garaska find a pre-war co-op apartment. Then you see an image of him, and then behind me, there's like a lot of images going, and an image of the neighborhood, and then boom, an image of Ninochka pops up, and you hear me channeling Ninochka. I wasn't afraid of being outspoken. When you are like that, you walk into trouble. When they
arrested me. The colonel said, do you know that in the list of 5,000 enemies of the state to be picked up, your number only had 2 digits? I said, first 100. I'm so honored.
And I listened to her for hours. And so her story continues. She's very defiant. Mm. And I thought she was an interesting person in terms of what she embodied.
Do many of the people who you embody see the actual piece?
We invited everybody. So we interviewed 150 people and included 79 in the book because you couldn't carry a book. That was one thing. But the other thing was they had to, I think all documentary artists, whether it's theater or film or books, you go through this. The stories had to meet a certain criteria.
Sure.
They had to be a good character. There had to be a good narrative. There had to be a reason we were putting it in, because we divided the book into themes of religion and political persecution and families and then unlikely bedfellows. And so we invited everybody that we interviewed. And when we did the book launch, we also performed and had some of the people perform as well. So we had a couple of the people that we included, who are also musicians, perform in the book launch. So I would say at least 60% of the people have seen it and or seen some element of it. And then once in a while, if the people are around, because with a documentary project, we freeze people in time, but time doesn't freeze.
Right.
So, for example, there is a gay couple from Colombia who were the targets of anti-gay vigilantes in Colombia. But here in the United States, their asylum case was based on the fact that they were gay, but that was 2000, so they were very nervous about it. Now, all these years later, they are citizens, right? It took them that long to get their papers, and they are married. Well, that's a huge shift, isn't it, in the political landscape. But Camilo, who came to see it and then was part of a talk back afterwards, and his story is very revealing. He talks about being, you know, attacked by men with machine guns. How do you prove machine guns? We do not walk around with videotapes in our heads. And so they were having to prove that they were attacked in their INS hearing. So he was sitting, and I didn't know this, but he was sitting in the back. I knew he was there, and he was going to talk afterwards. And when he got up and spoke to the audience afterwards, he said that he was, as he was hearing his own story and seeing his own image about being attacked and what that was like and finding asylum here, he started shrinking in his chair because he thought the audience was going to turn on him. And it wasn't rational. It was completely, I mean, now we call it PTSD, but it was completely an out-of-time experience. And that when he saw the opposite reaction, he relaxed. But that his first reaction to seeing me or somebody else present his story was fear, which was amazing to me because it also taught me something else about what am I doing in holding these stories? What's my responsibility as an artist to carry those stories forward with, you know, humor and with tenderness and with, you know, sharing the pain of what people have gone through.
The book is Crossing the Boulevard, Strangers, Neighbors, Aliens in a New America. There's also a show which will be performed as part of the Co-Festival of Performance in Amherst, Massachusetts on July 10th, 11th, and 12th. Judith will also perform the work at the New York Institute of Technology on July 13th. For more information, you can go to earsay.org, E-A-R-S-A-Y, earsay.org. Judith Sloan is a performer and co-author, creator with Warren Ware. Judith, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. And I just wanted to mention that the Co-Festival is going from this weekend to August. And the theme of this year, every weekend there's a different performance, is about, you know, newcomers and people coming to this land. So people should check that out.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for
having
me.
Again, it's Crossing the Boulevard. Thank you, by Judith Sloan. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.